Off top, the Philippines is believed to be the oldest democracy in Asia and also the first country in Asia to elect a female president. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. We are joined by, first of all, most important guest here. Well, I guess he's not a guest. My co-host and producer, Charlie, the Snack Kravitz, is in the building, y'all. Get excited. Woo woo! What's up, Charlie? Great to see you.
Great to see you, too.
I missed you, man. It's been like a whole 24 hours since last time we hung out.
Seriously. Are we going to introduce
Pablo?
Are you
guys done?
No, this is fine. It's passive-aggressive behavior from me because Pablo's freaking late, and I hate it. Like
30 minutes late.
What is the proper? And we had this. We used to have a show together called Debatable, and Pablo used to be late.
I don't recall.
And I got him to start showing up on time, and now he's late again to my show. Pablo Torre, you know him. He does ESPN stuff. He has a show, Pablo Torre Finds Out. They actually are reasonably good episodes. It's endorsed by Ryan Russillo, a man you can trust.
Yes. Shout out to Ryan Russillo. And shout out to you for continuing to be my friend despite me triggering you in ways that you have never forgiven me for.
Well, shout out to your yellow Curious George jacket. Hate that jacket.
It's a great jacket.
You wear it all
the
time. Weatherized. See, the thing that you don't understand about yellow is that's a bright accent thing. Like these shoes that I have on, these are shoes that I would wear occasionally.
It's great for the audio medium.
Are you mansplaining?
Great for the audio medium.
I'm sorry.
Colors
Charlie's
to
right.
Me?
Charlie's right. I'm just annoyed at you. Trust me. Charlie and I have a secret bit that we don't tell people about where we draft our friends.
Oh, yeah.
And you are moving down the draft board. Down the draft board today.
So, wait a minute. Hold on. What are the positions available that I can get in this draft?
I'm not sure we're ready to unveil this because it'll get us in trouble. But the point is, there is a position on my roster that I kept available as it's ironic because you're always tardy, but it's like kind of like organizer guy because you surprisingly can get things done. Like you can get reservations at fancy restaurants.
Yes, I can.
You can get tickets to important events and you like have, you're a star lover and you have connections that get
a
things
lover.
Done. So yeah.
I'm a star lovey. I'm loved upon.
Okay, fair.
For the record.
Fair point. And that is a useful person to have. And I would have had you in that role, but too tardy. Pissed me off.
Yeah.
Rolling down the draft board.
Yeah. But let's be clear. Our draft, whenever it happens.
Okay.
It's going to be like a classic all-NBA roster. There will be positions. It's not going to be a positionless draft.
Yeah, there will be positions.
One of whom will be bald whites.
Oh,
we'll
be
drafting our bald whites.
What a stacked category.
Bill Barnwell is at the top of that category, as we all know. But
through thick and thin, my brother in snacks, Mike Golick Jr.
Yeah, he's a strong contestant. Also, there is going to be
Russillo, also a strong contestant physically.
I feel like positional value wise, Mina's number one pick.
Hands
whoever
down.
Gets the number one pick is going Mina. Positional value wise, as like because all crews, and I base this off of like television show crews, like you think of like cartoons and TV shows, all those crews have like one woman. Mina is the most awesome.
And the April O'Neil of sports media.
I don't know.
Gangs.
I feel like I get a steal with L. Duncan. I feel like I get an L. Duncan steal right
I
there.
Just, who goes off the board first as our, because I think the position for Pablo is hobnobber.
That's a good name. We got to name his position.
But does he hobnob as well as Kevin Clark?
Ooh.
Because they're also both like sort of self-loathing
hold on,
nerds.
Hold on.
We have
to talk about what qualifies as a hob. Because Kevin Clark is out here knobbing with all sorts of dudes that I don't even know.
It's also similar
quaff. He's like, hey, have you... hold on. Kevin Clark's like, I'm knobbing the assistant general manager of the Chargers. Like, congratulations, cool knob.
We said hobnob, not slob on that.
Come on. 3-6, relax. But
also,
Charlie, he like got Charlie into some fancy golf course. I feel like Kevin Clark might got a little more pull than you.
Also, guaranteed he owns the same jacket. 100% certainty he has that jacket in his closet.
I'm not going to accuse Kevin Clark of plagiarizing my light jacket
and haircut
aesthetic and haircut and former employer full time, but or friends or general disposition when it comes to famous people. But I'm just saying people are noticing things.
You've upset me by being late, and you've upset me by forcing us to unveil this conceit before it was completely cooked. We're working on it. We're doing a friend draft eventually, and we need to create these positions. Hobnobber is a position. Pablo's on the draft board at that spot, but he's moving down the draft.
Number one.
We do have sports. We do have sports and things like that to talk about. Pablo, I am happy you're here, even though your tardiness pisses me off.
I'm really happy you're here. I missed you, Pavla.
Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, by the way, was the president, female president you were alluding to before.
Nice.
But why? What else did you want to
talk
about?
Way to Google it.
Did you know that three-toed sloths are the slowest animal on the planet? They move 41 yards per day.
It's good stuff.
I'm just glad to hear that Dominique wasn't going to use that to make fun of me for being late.
I was going to sure let you get to that on your own. Okay. All right, guys. So, should we talk about some sports? Should we do it? Should we do a podcast?
Let's do it.
This would be like if we were still doing Debatable, I would have been slamming on the card, being like, "Keep it moving." But now that I'm involved in the fun part, I just let it devolve into madness. But we do have the NBA playoffs.
All right,
leave this open ended. We'll all have an answer. What do you guys think is the most interesting first round playoff series? And I'm gonna leave this open ended enough that if you want to project the play-in games that we're taping this ahead of, feel free to invent your own playoff matchup between a 1-2 seed or a 7-8 seed.
Sounds like that's what Charlie did. So, Pablo, please do something different.
I don't know if I did that. You'll have to wait to find out.
I just feel, well, look, the one perspective on this is how, like, the broadcasters feel. And I can tell you that LeBron James and Steph Curry, like, those are the ones that they are very happy to have for an extra round, right? So that's the easy answer. Yes, I want to watch LeBron. I want to watch Steph. I want to watch them do all that stuff. But the answer for me, in terms of like a full series that I'm monitoring, is the Timberwolves and the Suns. Mm-hmm. And it's from every possible level. It's from the level of, wow, I get to watch Anthony Edwards, the most exciting, I think, American-born player in forever, be as good. I mean, look, what he does as a matter of just like highlight reel probability is unparalleled. And then you get the idea of like, I can also humiliate someone in the process. I can laugh at the idea that Kevin Durant has joined another super team. Dominique Foxworth, noted water carrier for Kevin Durant. He's going to have to, we don't have the ability to put that image up, I guess, anymore because.
Well,
Charlie,
if we do, Brian, we'll figure it out.
But if you're watching on YouTube, it will be.
Yeah.
So that, we will be dealing with that as well. And then there's the backstory of it, just like the big picture, Dominique, which is those two teams happen to have ownership situations that are incredibly, incredibly fraught. And one of them happens to involve the fact that Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry bought the Timberwolves until Glenn Taylor said, actually, no, you didn't. And now internally, there's this war between the business side, I am told, and the locker room and the basketball side, who are in favor of the new owners, and the business people are preserving their old jobs. That's in Minnesota. And then the other side, of course, there happens to be, you know, the guy who happens to be the subject of an episode that I did about alleged mortgage fraud. So lots of levels that I'm into that series on.
Yeah, those are all fun. I'm annoyed, of course. Like, why be such a hater? I don't understand the Kevin Durant hate, like wanting to enjoy laughing at that failure. I do agree that this series is fun. And I think the most interesting part of this series is the Anthony Edwards opportunity. Mm-hmm. Because Anthony Edwards has clearly seemed like he's been on a bit of an ascent and become like the people's champ to some degree, or a fan favorite around the league, and the person who I think is most often pointed to as the next great American like face of the NBA. But we all know that for basketball, especially, the playoffs is when your name really gets cemented. And those are the moments that give people an opportunity to raise you in the way that we talk about you, or lower you in the way that we talk about you. And we're going to end up talking about Joel Embiid and James Harden and a bunch of other players and Luka Doncic. Like, these guys, we all know them for what they've done in a regular season, but we all think about them and talk about them differently based on what they've done in the playoffs. That's the thing that happens all the time, and that is the most important part, or the most interesting part, about this series to me. And of course, the Suns' big three coming together and having success or not having success is an interesting kind of subplot, but it's not as important to me as Anthony Davis and Anthony Edwards. And in this spot, the Suns actually have a pretty good matchup, despite the fact that most of the season they've kind of looked like an underachieving team, right, Charlie?
Yeah, so the Suns have played a lot better down the stretch since all three guys.
And a lot better against the Timberwolves, too, yeah. Right?
They're favored in that series. Yeah. They're minus 118 favorites to beat the Timberwolves, who had a shot to get the one seed and had been one of the big stories of the season so far. But to me, Pablo, your point about what's at stake for Anthony Edwards, I'm not watching that series for the owners. I'm sorry, yeah, Pablo. I know that you wanted to plug your own podcast with that answer.
That's all it was.
It's great. Pablo Torre finds out. Go back to those archived episodes. They're evergreen and they're awesome. But I will not be looking at Matt Ishbia courtside being like, damn, I tuned in to watch this.
Just until Matt Ishbia refused to give the ball back to Anthony Edwards like he did to Nikola Jokic in the Western Conference
series that
they played last season.
Great point. One in Pablo's column.
That's not a good point. It's not a good point.
The closest thing to stopping Jokic anyone did in the playoffs last year.
Thank you.
Oh, gosh.
But I can't believe I'm saying this because I've been a noted – Dominique's noted opposition to his Kevin Durant knob whatevering.
His knob appreciation
of Kevin Durant. But look, it's a big deal if Anthony Edwards actually outplays Kevin Durant in a playoff series. It's probably a bigger deal in theory if he outplays Devin Booker, same position right now. Right. But Kevin Durant, he's one of the, however you want to rank it, he's one of the best players of all time. Those guys they get knocked off when they're old, and that's a significant moment. And this is a unique opportunity because he actually has a team where it's relatively even on paper. And if Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves win this series, it'll likely be because he is the best player in the series. And we haven't really seen Kevin Durant get outplayed that much in the postseason by guys unless it matters. This is like the ascension of Jason Tatum happened when he outplayed Kevin Durant in the playoff series. We then viewed him as a superstar. That's a really important checkpoint for Anthony Edwards.
And I mean, just more about the series, like Karl Anthony Towns is healthy-ish and back, and I think he'll be pivotal in this series. And obviously there's the ongoing plot of Rudy Gobert's played off the court in the playoffs. Is that going to happen or not? Like, these are all interesting things that I think make this series exciting, interesting, worthwhile talking about. Should I go to mine or you have more on this one?
No. Right. Go ahead.
I think mine is the Mavs and the Clippers. They have history and within the playoffs going back and very tough series. I think both of these teams are teams that might be long shots to win the West, but for different reasons. If you could guarantee me health for Kawhi Leonard, I think no one would be shocked if they won the West. But I think people would be shocked if the Mavs won the West. But the way that Luka's gone off in the playoffs in recent history, I think – it's something that is, you talk about those playoff steps that teams or players can take. Luka's someone who's taken that step many times. He's done it against the Clippers, despite the fact that I don't think they've actually ever beaten them. But he knocked off the Suns a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember the game?
Yeah, I remember the game.
Chris Paul makes a three to put the Suns down 48.
Oh, gosh.
The best.
Oh, God.
But I do think this is one of those series that I really have no idea who's going to win it. Kyrie's playing incredibly well right now.
Dallas is favored.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
But, I mean, do they feel... I guess to me, it doesn't feel obvious. It feels like a coin toss.
It's a minus 125 favorite for Dallas, so it is closer to a coin toss.
No, this is, I mean, both of the series we have discussed already are going to be great.
Yeah.
Like, these are close. I would not be surprised if it went either way, but with Lucas specifically, like, yeah, he did. It was against the Clippers in the bubble, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, his first announcement as a playoff performer was that three in overtime, I think. And so Luka, as a guy who is, I mean, regularly now we just hear it said with total non-controversy, this is the best player in the league. And everyone's like, yeah, I could see that. Right? It's him or it's Jokic or whoever, or it's SGA. But he's a valid answer.
Yeah.
And I think the question of like the whole him and Kyrie thing, so much of what I'm interested in when it comes to both Durant and that storyline about humiliation and also the Mavericks and also the Clippers is these were experiments that people doubted. And so Kyrie and Luka was the thing we all laughed at. I remember laughing at it.
Yeah.
And when Kyrie is doing the thing where he's hitting shots and game winners that we've not seen before from a physics perspective, you know, one-handed runners, 20 feet away, all that stuff. And he's playing alongside Luka in a way that really does make sense. Lefty, that means, okay, like the franchise that they are building there, actually, we were wrong about. And the Clippers is the opposite thing to me, where it's like, I was so bullish on them, but Charlie, tell me, right? What do you think is at stake for the Clippers if they flame out of the postseason, having had the pairing of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George for how many years has it been now? They've gotten to try this?
I think the outcome will be that Paul George will be on your beloved Philadelphia 76ers if they lose this series. This is Paul George, who's been incredibly vocal about the team no longer having an identity, which is very interesting because the team played so well in January and a stretch in February when him and Kawhi were playing a lot of minutes. Paul George was really healthy and really good this season, and they had that little blip. I think it's like the James Harden high when you add him, and at first everyone's on their best behavior and he's functioning as a true point guard on a team that really didn't have an effective passer. And then he starts to get the disease of James Harden, where he wants to stand in one place and dribble the ball a lot. It seems like that pairing, barring a very deep playoff run, which is more dependent on Kawhi Leonard's knee swelling than it is anything else, is going to be about where Paul George is next year. And Daryl Morey has been very clear that he will be the person that has a good team that has cap space this summer. Paul George is a perfect fit.
Yeah, you brought up the James Harden idea, and I think that's also something that we appreciate around here is how important stars are. Mm-hmm. We didn't even bring up Russell Westbrook. Obviously, he's not a huge role. He's kind of an energy man off the bench, a six man, but all teams have that guy. Nobody has a guy who we actually know and care about to this degree. And seeing all of these big playoff characters in this moment will be fun, especially when things get tight. Seeing how James Harden interacts with playoff P, because he's coming. Playoff P is going to make an appearance. And Kawhi in those big clutch moments, along with Russell Westbrook coming off the bench. Who were they playing a couple weeks ago?
There's no two different Russells than Russell Westbrook and Russell Wilson.
But the R with the W, it confuses me. But I was watching. I forgot who they were playing, but he's just doing maniac stuff that you don't expect. I was watching them play someone else, and he's coming off the bench, and he clearly understands that part of his role is energy for this team, and he's taking it to heart, and it feels a lot like it's out of control, and when it works, it bounces the team, I guess, but it feels like it so rarely works the way that he wants it to, and he starts pulling up crazy shots. But anyway, in the playoffs, I want to see that with Luka in complete control of these games, because they're going to be close down the stretch.
It's also like Luka's the only guy who... one of the few wings who's not scared of those other two wings, like defensively, like when Kawhi or Paul George locks in,
he's enormous. Yeah. Luka is enormous.
And I just like, Pablo, to your point, he hit that step back three that everyone, they put on Father Stretch My Hands, and the clip went ultra viral as soon as the ball went through the net. He's just like sort of uniquely cocky in those situations, which will make it very fun. Can I give my pick?
Oh, sure.
My pick.
Fabricated one.
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
It is the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Indiana Pacers.
Oh, okay, cool.
Pablo, you're going to like this
one.
Wow. You're going to like this one.
Okay. Convince me.
Here's the deal. Giannis is going to miss at least the beginning of the
series. Oh, yeah, I can't wait to watch that series.
But you will. Yes, you will, because this is a series where you're actually going to want to watch the sideline. Mm-hmm. You're going to be wanting to watch the Bucks bench. Doc Rivers has not been, I know Pablo's going to say, there's no one who I like more off of an NBA court who I like less coaching my favorite team than Glenn Doc Rivers. He can charm you.
It's all true. He's so charming. He's very charismatic.
Well, he's not a 500 coach of this Milwaukee Bucks team that might have bought a lemon in Damian Lillard, who doesn't seem like the same player he was.
How secure are we in saying that he's a lemon? Because I am tempted by this take, but I don't have the balls to say it.
No, I'm not secure at all.
But there's only one lemon on this podcast. But
that's a great joke about the jacket. That again, audio medium. Pablo looks like a lemon.
As you know, I don't do the show for them. I do it for you. Charlie.
Anyway,
I do it for you.
Anyway. The Bucks.
I also referenced
all...
April O'Neil before, and I'm kind of like dressed like April O'Neil, incidentally. But I wanted to cell phone, hand up. That was on me.
The Bucks. are all in on a roster that is old. Chris Middleton is old. Damian Lillard is old and maybe a lemon. Pablo, don't make the joke I think you're going to make. But Giannis has been nothing but committed to the Bucks. But what is going to be the cost of this? If they lose to a Pacers team that hasn't been the same as a bottom five defense, and Halliburton hasn't been the same since his injury, to make an all-NBA roster, which he might not have made anyway because of the 65-game limit, we could be careening towards the next superstar in the trade market, which, bing bong. Bing bong. Wow. Pablo's beloved Knicks are going to have Giannis.
Oh, no, he's not welcome back. He quit the Knicks a few years ago.
And no.
Yeah, everyone's mad at me, too, now, today, because of the whole Knicks video that was on today's show. Can I point something out about Doc Rivers, which is that is the last person I'd want to have to manage any degree of locker room disharmony. If your franchise is hinging on Doc Rivers' ability to get buy-in from stars whose egos are in conflict, I have bad news for you.
How is it? There should be a 30. Actually, Pablo, can you effort this on your show? How did he manage Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Rajon Rondo, and Ray Allen? And Kendrick Perkins was on that team.
I think my guess is that what Pablo may find out, my guess is that it's pretty obvious, is that Kevin Garnett managed all of that.
He can't
those
manage.
Guys felt, those guys came there at a point in their career where things were less difficult, and Rajon Rondo wanted to play and play well, and it's pretty easy to manage. A bunch of guys pointing in the same direction, and when the repercussion is, KG wants a title, y'all, who's going to... It doesn't, no problems, get to Glenn.
Have you seen a Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce live stream? Kevin Garnett cannot manage Paul Pierce.
Whoa. Are those live streams good and funny? That he is managing. He is doing a good job.
Kevin Garnett is also a great friend you want to draft. Oh. You want to draft Kevin Garnett when you have another friend who has a girlfriend for a day and he's not sure he's on camera or not. You want Kevin Garnett number one overall. The thing that Doc Rivers did, just to put a button on that, and this is the counterboy from Doc Rivers, Ubuntu. Wasn't that his thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
He was like, hey, you guys may be aware of all of these like really strong-headed leader types that we've assembled, but no, I got a philosophy, and it's one word, and this is the reason why we won a title. He's been eating off of the Ubuntu plate for a long time.
I totally forgot that Big Baby Davis is on that team, who's made supervillain videos from private jets, who's like defrauded people.
This is, I mean...
Insane.
They were different people back then, too. Mm-hmm. They were all very different people back then, much easier to manage, I think. All right. Is there more NBA playoff stuff? Like, I do want to wonder how deep you think the Knicks can go, considering how relatively weak, I guess, the East is outside of the Celtics. Because none of our series, well, your series, Charlie, was in the East, right? But none of the Eastern series seem nearly as interesting, because it kind of feels like a foregone conclusion that the Celtics have numbers that suggest they're one of the best teams of all time going up against a bunch of guys in the Eastern Conference who are injured and not good.
I would say that the Knicks, to make the case for the Knicks, is to say the Knicks beat the Celtics a couple days ago. The Celtics, I am told, internally, there are teams the Celtics don't worry about. The Celtics, much to my chagrin, do not worry about the Sixers.
Right?
They feel like they know how to handle them. They worry about the Miami Heat, who have been a troublesome foe for years now. And they worry actually about the Knicks in this current iteration. And that's even despite the Randall injury. I think the Knicks defensively, and really the question is, like, beyond the defense is, and this goes to another pet NBA nerd theory, which we can, I guess, litigate this postseason. But how far can you go when your best player is a small guard? Hmm. Like, it's Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson in the regular season is an first-team All-NBA caliber player. But when it comes to the postseason, it's this question of, and we always, you guys circle this all the time on the show. Yeah. The postseason is this differentiator when suddenly the math of the NBA, you're reminded, is very simple. One of the mathematical axioms of playoff basketball has been, it's the too small thing. It's like, is Jalen Brunson just too small? And that's fundamentally the biggest doubt that anybody should have about the Knicks.
So you said something interesting there. The Celtics care about the Heat and the Knicks. There's a through line there.
Yeah.
They're afraid of really tough-nosed teams. Yeah.
Yes.
And while Jalen Brunson's a small guard, he is tough as He's like a human fire hydrant. And we thought that because he's a little bit of a foul merchant, his numbers might get worse once they sort of changed the rules of the NBA this season and made it more physical, much closer to playoff basketball. No. Knicks kept getting hurt, and he just kept on playing at the same efficiency, getting better and really better impressive. And better.
I feel like it's an obligation to say that when you mention a Julius Randle injury, like I feel like I'm obligated to say that they might be better off without him. Like it's the going belief that Julius Randle is a inefficient offensive basketball player, right?
I don't think they have enough talent to be better without him.
Okay.
I think if they were a more talented team, yeah, they have their fun lineup where they can play Hartenstein, not White. OG Anunoby, Dante DiVincenzo, Jalen Brunson. White. Really?
JK. Dante?
You could have convinced me for a second after the Hartenstein.
Once
video.
Isaiah Hartenstein has identified as bright skin, once we allow that, which seems to be okay based on Ancestry.com results, then anything is possible, yeah. Quite frankly.
Not Ancestry.com results, dad results. You don't got to go that far. The man's dad is black, so he's black. It's the way it's always worked in this country. Anyway, you were making a point that was not...
Well, it's just that roster, while tough and Villanova based and and they're all good passers and all unselfish players, it's not a team that has that runs like 8 or 9 or 10 deep where you have talented guys who can fill the role. This is not Naz Reid filling minutes for Karl-Anthony Towns and becoming like a really unique offensive weapon.
Yeah, I mean, I think the hard-nosedness of that competition suggests a lot more Al Horford minutes than Porzingis minutes, which is a less explosive version of this team. And I think But no one actually thinks that.
No, Celtics are making the finals.
Yeah, okay, good. So we're done with that. That's enough. I mean, that's all we need to talk about.
Yeah, I said, right. If I were to make the case, I am making the case. It was the conditional.
All right, April, chill out.
Do you guys think that you could beat Rajon Rondo in Connect Four?
No, I don't think I could beat Rajon Rondo in anything.
But like, I would like to challenge him formally to do so, actually.
Is it really that hard to at least force a tie
in
Connect Four? Like, how is he the best Connect Four player in the world?
It's kind of like being the best tic-tac-toe player, where it's like the best you're going to do is stalemate me.
Yeah.
Fair point. Same thing with checkers, right? It's like, it's not really.
This does put the Boston Celtics.
There's no real general complexity to the game to allow you to like trick or confuse anybody.
Anyway. That seems like a claim that you would make, Dominique.
What?
You would claim to be the best Connect Four player in the world.
I am, but.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm not.
Okay, very good.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, speaking of best in the world.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for the transition. I was just yammering on. WNBA draft happened Monday night. It was a big deal. Yeah. It had a lot of coverage, and this is after, you know, the women's NCAA final outdrew the Masters, outdrew everything, had 18.6 million viewers. But there's a really interesting thing going on where Caitlin Clark is now going to be, honestly, she's going to be the face of the WNBA from the second she steps into the league.
Yes.
And it's incredibly important. Ticket prices for her games are going up and up and up. Some of these teams are moving their games against the Indiana Fever into bigger arenas. And my question to you guys is, what does the WNBA need to do to capitalize on the hype around Caitlin Clark? Because this is an important moment for this league.
I mean, I'll step back a second before we get into what they need to do and just point out the fact that they have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity right here. And I find it interesting to even, like, talk. I watched the draft, and it was a cool little made-for-TV program. But, you know, I like to, like, on how drafts are unethical and we shouldn't have them in there against, like, antitrust rules that we have. I also think that in situations like this, they really kind of suck for everybody, because if you think about them as a business that has an opportunity, and you think about any like startup company that has success, there are some random things that happen in the environment around them that allow them to succeed, whether they can control it or not. They actually have an opportunity to control this one piece, because she draws enough audience that people will watch games. And if they love their games, then they will stay and become fans. The idea that this opportunity is kind of the way that I felt about Wimby. It's like that this gym is coming in and you're just like, hands behind my back, close my eyes, cross my fingers. Hopefully someone we can trust in a team in a market that is perfect will get this player. No, I would cheat the hell out of that. I would put her exactly where I wanted. And I actually think they kind of did. The Indiana Fever with the reigning
number one rookie, overall pick.
Yeah, reigning rookie Aaliyah Boston, of the year, Aaliyah Boston, and number one overall pick, a young team in the Midwest, in a major city with attracts enough attention. Like, I think this is absolutely the perfect place to have her.
I love the frozen envelope theory of why the Indiana Fever would have gotten this if they didn't actually just organically get it.
I mean, because they should cheat.
I love that you went all around this to be like, it was bad business, but their bad business got it right.
No.
Thank you for that.
It was bad business.
Drafts are unethical, but also this is fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But speaking of a bad business getting it right, we're talking about what lessons did we learn from the NCAA and women's college basketball that they can take and apply here, because in some way, this is truly, as Dominique was alluding to, the greatest gift a sport could possibly get. Here is somebody who is uniquely transformative. Congratulations. All you got to do is not do something different from what she was just doing before. And so the question is, can the WNBA replicate what made her special in college? And I think from the whole like storytelling branding perspective, what Indiana actually allows is something that is, I think, key to the Caitlin Clark phenomenon, which is key to the Steph Curry phenomenon, which is here you have the greatest of all time at doing a specific thing. In Caitlin Clark's case, of course, and in Steph's case, it's shooting threes. How can you make this person who is the best ever at doing this thing also feel like an underdog simultaneously? How can you have David also be Goliath? It's kind of this fascinating dynamic that's key, I think, integral to the three-pointer as a concept, actually. It's that, yes, you can make this shot 40% of the time, 42% of the time, better than anybody else has ever done it. But every time you pull the trigger, it feels like a little miracle because, oh my God, they're shooting from so far away. So that's like the way that she plays and why we're so into it. But then from a franchise perspective, you're asking yourself, okay, Iowa got to feel, and this is where the Indiana thing comes in, kind of like Hoosiers in a way that I think the WNBA is going to want to lean in on. And of course, even outside of the culture war stuff, black and white and all of that, Aliyah Boston being her running mate is making this a different story in that way. But the reality is you can have the little Indiana Fever yep. in a league ruled by super teams, the Las Vegas Aces and New York Liberty, super teams, legit super teams. You can have the Indiana Fever be David, be Cinderella. Right. And that story can be very similar, Midwest and all, to the story that people fell in love with in college.
Yeah, I think that the most important thing is we have to, and we talk about this a lot on the show, is understand that this is entertainment property and entertainment properties. Wrestling does it because their events are scripted to some degree, or I don't know how much, I don't watch wrestling anymore, but the point is they make it very clear that most of the show is about the show, and then we have these peak events that are like exclamation points. And we have to be honest, for things, there are always going to be diehard fans that love the sport, but for things to get as big as the NCAA tournament games got, or just get as big as the Super Bowl gets, those get big because they're storylines that touch everybody and storylines that give you a reason to turn on the television and see what's going to happen. And I think in college it was easy because there was a short time frame, you know, like, all right, we know that there's an endpoint. And for the way that it could go wrong, I think, is if they do not properly set up and market and communicate the milestones that she is going after, or the checkpoints that she is going after. First one's easy. Her first game, cool. But if there is ever anybody coming into town, or her going to play someone, a name that we care about,
yeah.
need to cook it up.
Well, that's the one too. It's Taurasi. It's 41-year-old Taurasi, who's done nothing but on Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark went on Saturday Night Live, thanked all of the great players before her.
Oh, Kravitz noticed.
Except for Diana Taurasi.
The GOAT. Arguably the GOAT.
Yeah.
She did not thank Taurasi.
And the Phoenix Mercury's already started a campaign called The Rook versus the GOAT.
Yeah.
So that's the one. And it's position.
I love that, yeah. by the way. But no, but hold on. Just on that, like, actually be pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to lean in. And again, you don't want to do it to the point right. where
you don't be cutting
it's
promos.
Clumsy.
Yeah,
but it's the gift that the WNBA has is the gift of organic enmity driven by ego. That's happened before she's even played a game. Right. Don't hide that. Let that actually become part of the framing here.
I have a question for you guys. Needle movers in basketball. Mm-hmm. Where is Caitlin Clark on the list for you? If I'm talking men's and women's basketball, there is a big Caitlin Clark event because I have my list and she's up very high.
Yo, hold on. She's number one. Like, she outrated every NBA game ever broadcast on ESPN. From a pure novelty perspective, what do I expect people to tune in for? I think she has a strong claim to be number one overall.
The funny thing that you made, Pablo, about the storylines was a David versus Goliath, a real life Hoosiers, a kind of underdog Midwest team. That wasn't the movie that I thought I watched last season. Like, maybe that was the movie that some people thought they were watching because it made it more fun for them to watch it. I loved watching Caitlin Clark because I thought I was watching John Wick. Like, I was like, this person is outmatched going up against more talented teams. And I knew that this person to mix movies has a very particular set of skills that I want to see go up against this other super dominant team. And I think it's interesting. The different stories can be different for different people. But now what we're looking at now is like the more classic Rocky story, David versus Goliath to some degree, which seems weird because he's the number one overall pick. But it's a more classic kind of hero's journey from the bottom. And I think why I pick Rocky is because she's inevitably not going to win the championship this year. She may not even make the playoffs. But what we expect to see,
8 of the 12 teams make the playoffs. She'll probably make the playoffs.
But either way, the point is she'll be out in the first round. The point is what we're going to see is her out there trying to valiantly fight this effort and ultimately not being the best player in the league. Like, that's the first season, like the first episode of Rocky.
There's a lot to this too, because the WNBA, this is a really important time. Like, this league, you know, there's a story about how Caitlin Clark's makes $76,000 next year, and that's because of the TV deal, because of prior WNBA TV ratings. And like, so it's really important for the WNBA to put Caitlin Clark out there to market her. But that's also been something that's offended the dignitaries of the game in the past. So it's like, you know, she's not guaranteed a Team USA spot. She's going to annoy Breonna Stewart and Diana Taurasi. Oh,
I am giving her every possible spot. So I think, and by the way, again, organically offending people's egos is something that I would be okay with, right? Let them be mad. Let them resent this and show that resentment in the games that then have stakes. And Dominique raised a really good point about, like, who do we see when we see Caitlin Clark? I framed it in the most, like, mainstream America Hollywood way for a reason. But I think that it's also fair to point out that part of the Steph Curry lie, right? The reason why she's also like Steph is that she gets to be infantilized while also playing deeply arrogantly. And so the John Wick analysis is totally on to me. I totally co-sign that. She also has some of that Kobe in her where it's like she can be. Wright Thompson's story on her was really interesting in this way. She had to work on being less of an to her teammates because she is a total cutthroat, hyper-competitive maniac. Yeah. And so what I want to see from her, to just boil it down to the most simple thing, I want to see her take way too many unapologetic threes that make people mad and make other people feel like they were watching something that they could do if they were granted the wish they have had for their entire life to be in this league and, you know, be the suburban kid come true as the all-time great. I think all of those things are on the table, and that's why she's drawing 19 million people almost.
There's a lot too, because the league could do nothing. And it's like she'll be a Nike athlete, and that could the Nike campaign could be huge for the WNBA. That's if you put the Tiger Woods of it all to this, where Tiger, the PGA didn't really change for Tiger. Tiger came, Nike had a huge campaign, and then he made all of his coworkers millionaires by bringing so many more eyeballs and so much more sponsorship money to the sport. That's legitimately possible. But I do want to raise an idea. And I thought about this idea for a few reasons. So guy Paul Rabil. He was, some people think he's like the best lacrosse player of all time. Professional lacrosse obviously had not been a major success, nor is it still a huge deal. But he was basically saying how this league is paying guys $10,000. They're basically all investment bankers playing on the side. Why don't we have a tour-based, event-based system to have huge events that can be televised, that can tour, that can have these games in different spots? The WNBA is still at such like an infant stage of its league compared to Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NBA. Why don't they try and own a day in the summer?
Yeah.
Why don't they try and have like an East and a West day where these things have a bunch of games on one day and they own a network for that day? Because people would tune in for this Caitlin Clark versus Diana Taurasi versus Angel Reese versus so-and-so. And we've seen this event-based model be something that can be like hugely interesting to fans. We had a tennis exhibition between Nadal and Alcaraz that was streamed for 36 million hours for an exhibition for guys practicing tennis. Like if the next TV rights are up in 2025 and you can have a product that is completely different and completely compelling, that's something that could change the salaries of Caitlin Clark and WNBA players for generations.
That's interesting because I think that it wisely does something or protects us against something that I think we're all in the risk of doing and is an obvious risk of overexposure because we're all like, put on everything, put on NBA team, do this, do that, get all this stuff going. But I do think what you need to do is not show her as much as possible, but find key situations where you can make this an event that people will watch and also then expose people to the other good players and interesting personalities.
That's essentially what the NCAA tournament is, too.
Right.
Yeah.
It is like a opportunity for showcase of those players in those situations. I think that's an awesome idea. Don't leave me. Stay here. Don't go give ideas to the WNBA. Then who's going to co-host my podcast?
I don't know. Kravitz is Vorp, I think, on this draft board. I have some theories about who could replace him, but I guess that's not this episode, no. So I'll save those for another one.
Undraftable. Is this my keeper?
Yeah, this is tough. It's Cortez, Tommy Alter. They could be available. Could upgrade to get Mike Ryan. Is Cortez getting jacked now?
Yeah, he's over behind the glass. He's been Instagram storying himself with Roid Crew 2.0 captions.
Oh gosh.
Does he have a guy?
Which if you don't, I think he might be the guy. As in, I think he might be trafficking in anabolic steroids.
I don't know why Charlie's asking. Like, we do push-ups over.
Yeah, I know.
Shut bros.
Yeah. Dominique's trying to make me less fat.
We hold each other accountable.
All right, guys. last topic, because this is, we touched on a little bit with the women's side on the Team USA roster, but the men's roster was mostly announced, 11 of the 12 spots, and it's really old. Thoughts on the Team USA men's roster, which does include LeBron, Steph, Kevin Durant?
Yeah. I mean,
my first thought, just to frame Dominique's take on this, whatever it may be, my first thought is that in the World Cup in the Philippines, the U.S. did not medal. And that is just one data point, of course. The World Cup is not the Olympics, but also remember that if you look at where the best players in the NBA are coming from, it is not from the United States. So the question of like what to do with this team should be from the perspective of we need to win this thing. And I would say that even if the best players are the older guys, like, do I want LeBron James on this team? Yes. Do I want Joel Embiid on this team? Yes. Like, I would proceed with that in mind of, like, desperation, kind of.
I've already started to let go, guys. This might be our last one. My original reaction was when I saw the top billing of LeBron, Durant, Curry, was kind of like, damn, thought y'all was done. Like, isn't it time for somebody else? Like, are you guys, maybe you need to bring Carmelo back too and have him on the roster. I don't know. Maybe I'm being mean. And of course, I'd rather see a basketball tournament with them in it than not. But it was shocking to me that they were involved in it. But I do think that we are going to a place real soon here where it's not a foregone conclusion. It's not going to be a foregone conclusion that the NBA is going to win or that it's up to the NBA to decide, because that's what it's kind of felt like in all international tournaments, was like the NBA knows when they want to go win it, or excuse me, USA knows when they want to go win it and they go win it. This one feels like this might be the last time where, or close to the last time where we can just show up and know that the best players, all of the best players on the floor are on our team. Our bench is better than all the starters on the other team. That ain't going to be the same coming up here real soon.
So I looked something up.
Okay.
If you've represented one country on the international stage,
uh-oh,
you have to wait 3 years before you can represent another country. LeBron James was not on the 2020 Olympic team. I posit LeBron James should get, and Bronny, should LeBron should offer up his services for another country.
Where?
To get Bronny on an Olympic
country
team.
What country are you giving the LeBrons to?
I mean, with being that's LeBron, he should go play in France with Wemby. And LeBron and LeBronny should be on the French national team. And that would be the most interesting outcome.
We've clearly run to...
I didn't just get you on an NBA roster, son. I got you a gold medal. You are now with Carmelo Anthony as your champions.
Oh, gosh. All right. I think we are reached the bottom of the content well, where we are now telling LeBron James that he should take over.
I was going to say Philippines. I was going to say Philippines, but delay actually is a compelling argument. I want to see LeBron finally embrace the heritage he's rejected.
You give up so easy. Philippines. There you go.
Oh, wow.
You could have stole them, but you missed your opportunity. Yeah, you were sliding down this draft board rapidly. Anyway.
Are we done yet?
Yeah,
we're done with the show?
God. We're done.
Okay.
Thank you to Pablo, I guess, for being here. Thank you, yes, Charlie. You're the best host and producer ever. Also, congratulations to Brian on his big engagement. He's our producer. Thanks
Hello.
To all the...
What? I was just celebrating Brian. And also saying a special sorry to Kevin Clark for accusing you of being my talented Mr. Ripley. Did not mean to imply that. Oh,
gosh. Thanks for stepping on Brian's congratulations.
Now he's hobbing Kevin Clark's
congratulations.
Now.
Yeah,
anyway, thanks, Kevin, Serafina, Megan, Podville. This place is beautiful. We're the best. We're out of here.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.